From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, give us a call at 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba?
Yes, plunging into ice-cold water might give you pain relief.
Okay.
And eating fast might raise your risk of obesity. Interesting information from the Japanese, who, by the way, are not known for their obesity.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, not known for their obesity.
And our recipe?
Yes, well, we have a recipe. It's called Stars and Chicken Stew. I'd call it more of like, I want to really call it Stars and Stripes Chicken Stew, so we go boop, doo-doo. We kind of do the John Philip Sousa recipe. But anyway, it's stars, pasta, it's chicken, and yep. It's stew.
Oh, looking forward. Right now to the phones we go, Zorba, at 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins in from El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I have a one-year-old. He's about 14 months, actually, now. And he's actually been pretty healthy, but he's gotten sick a couple times. And as a new parent, he's our first and only child so far. As a new parent, my first reaction is to want to, like, take him to the doctor and hey, what's going on with this, like, right away. But I was wondering, but I've also heard that, you know, kids get sick and they also, you know, fight it off. So I've also heard that you can just not take him to the doctor until it gets to a certain point. But what I was wondering is, when is that point at which you need to take him? And how long, what do you look for?
Well, first of all, there are a couple of issues here. A child under 6 months of age, not your child, but a child under 6 months of age, that's where a temperature is really not a guide. A lot of kids can really be very sick that are 3 months old. They're sick, they're ill, they don't have much of a fever because they don't really mount an immune response. So we worry about kids underneath 6 months of age when they get sick because mom's immunity is often in them. They still have her gamma globulin, essentially all the antibodies that mom will have. And at 6 months old, they're kind of gone. So at 14 months, the first thing you do is you look at your child. So how sick does the 14-month look? So you kind of look at the temperature. I want to go back one step. Dr. Spock had a great book, and he came out with a book like in 1953, Child and Care, something like that. And he changed the course, really, of medicine because he gave moms in those days, dads mm-hmm. secondary, but really the ability to actually make decisions on what to do. So having a good book to kind of look at that makes one difference. So I highly recommend you get a childcare book. And actually, Dr. Spock's book that I looked at years later, it's actually still pretty good. It's probably 60 or 70 years after it was now 70. Yeah, but it could be 70 years after it was actually published. Is that your baby?
Yeah, that's him right here.
Yeah. He's just chiming in. He agrees, of course. That's exactly what he's doing. He's agreeing
Apparently
with you.
Apparently he likes it. He wants me to buy it right now.
Of course. You're the dad and you're talking on the phone. So I think a good measure is a temperature. That's really what you look at.
Okay.
So if your child has 104 temperature, what you want to do is call up the doctor's office and say, hey, my child has 104 temperature. Now, you want to treat it right away if you feel that that's the right thing to do. We know that fevers are actually good to help fight infection, but we know that kids who have fevers are much more irritable. And as a parent, I always gave Tylenol or I gave ibuprofen to my kids because they feel better and they look better and they drink more. So number one, treat the fever. If it stays at about 103, 104, you kind of want to, that's one reason that you would call the doctor. If your child is short of breath, it's like breathing heavily and you just don't know what's going on, get on the phone, call the doctor. That's what you do. If your child acts lethargic, like really just much more tired than you've ever seen your child before, I just don't know what's going on. If your child isn't peeing or urinating because basically they're dehydrated, you may have given Pedialyte or something else, call your doctor. That kind of situation is there. Now, it turns out that first-time parents tend to call a doctor more than second-time parents.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Third-time parents. So we had three children in 30 months. And so that's a lot of kids in a short period of time. And I remember child number one, we were kind of wondering what was going on. Even though I'm a doctor, I have to pay attention to, you know, it's like everybody else. I kind of wonder about things. And by the time child number three came along, we let child number one make the decision whether or not anything was going on. So it's temperature, it's hydration, it's lethargy. And if there's a question, that's exactly why you've got your doctor's number out there. So you have a boy or you've got a boy there or a girl? A boy?
A little boy.
What's his name?
His name's August.
August. How wonderful. That's really good. So, yeah, get a book, though. Books are really good. They really give you the ability. They give you empowerment to make decisions because you look at a book that's there. Of course, you can also look on the web. But I think for something like this, there's nothing like a book that you look at because then you know the book is standardized. If you go on the web, you've got to make sure you're on a good website because I don't know.
Right.
If you know, but sometimes the web has fake news.
That's going to be in terms of the dictionary now.
Hey, that's why I'm saying it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
You have a great day.
We appreciate the call. At 800-462-7413.
But it is the case. I used to say that, I mean, that's become kind of a saying because obviously it has. I don't mean to make political overtones one way or another. But there's a lot of stuff on the web that's good, and there's a lot of stuff on the web that's bad. And so when you're looking at a child, you want to differentiate for your child. You want to go to a reliable website. Maybe the website of the doctor's office. It may be a website of a university. It may be a large clinic like Mayo Clinic or a place like Johns Hopkins. You're going to then get good information. But a book that you know that is an excellent book, like Dr. Spock, you know when you go to it, it's good information. And I think when it comes to a child, it's nice to have that book around.
And no fake news on Zorba Pastor.
No, not at all. Not at all. We give you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Tell us, if you will, Zorba, about cold water swimming.
Well, this is a fascinating article that came out of the BMJ, and it actually looked at somebody who was a triathlon who had this tremendous pain. He actually had a surgical procedure, and after the surgical procedure, he continued with pain and numbing. The procedure was successful, but 10 weeks later, he was on strong painkillers. He was on physical therapy. He was an exerciser. Nothing was going well for this young man. He was in his late 20s. He was on the painkillers. Didn't like to have it. Awful thing. So, lo and behold, he said, I'm still going to go and do some of my triathlon things. One of the things that he did as an athlete is he would jump into cold water for a sport. This was in the UK. Mm-hmm. And once you actually did it, you actually had to stay in the water for 2 minutes. In other words, you jumped into icy cold water and you didn't jump right out. That was part of like the thing, kind of like the polar plunge.
Yeah.
But the polar plunge is you plunge in and you get out. In this case, you move around for 2 minutes. So he plunged in the water, shockingly cold water. And what happened was he came out 2 minutes later when he was done and his pain had gone away.
Huh.
And it stayed away. It didn't come back. In other words, the pain stayed away for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And he never went back on the strong painkillers. And it's a fascinating, fascinating situation. It's just a report of one person.
Yeah, that's not a study we're talking about.
No, but sometimes things happen in a serendipity way that you then begin to look at and decide. So I want to make two asides. Back in the day before we had good medications for depression and anxiety and so on, we did all kinds of shock therapy. We did cold water shock therapy, insulin shock therapy. Turns out that ECT, electric shock therapy, actually helps people with severe depression and still does today. Mm-hmm. You know, why does an electrical current work in the brain in order to get rid of severe depression? I don't think anyone really knows. We make up all these theories, but we don't know. We haven't tried something such as shockingly cold water therapy for people who have unremitting pain, unremitting nerve pain, for example, to see whether or not it resets the thermostat, whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this particular study is quite interesting because we have people who are on large doses of medication who don't, often opioids, especially with neuropathic pain, who don't get any better. And it may be that this particular, you know, study of one will give us an idea of what we might actually do. It might be that subjection to sudden, sharp, cold water will actually reset something in terms of painkillers for people. I don't know. It's one of those fascinating things. And I want to make a side for this on drugs where this has worked. So there's a drug, I'll give you the name of the drug when I'm all finished, that I used to do clinical testing, full disclosure, for 35 years. I tested about maybe 100 different pharmaceutical drugs. I like doing that. And one of the drugs we were supposed to test was a drug for high blood pressure. It had been tested in a preliminary study, and they decided they weren't going to use the drug for high blood pressure because it wasn't a very good drug for high blood pressure. But they found that the men on the study did not want to give up the drug, and they weren't exactly sure why. They wanted to continue in the open-label study. And it turned out the men in the study wanted to keep the drug, and the drug's name is Viagra.
Huh. I wonder why they wanted to keep taking that drug.
No one had any idea that this group of antihypertensive drugs that didn't work for high blood pressure turned out to work for erectile function, to improve erectile function. So in other words, the side effect of the drug turned out to be the usefulness for the drug.
When that drug started out, nobody knew that it had to do with erectile dysfunction?
No, it was a blood pressure drug, and it really didn't work very well as a blood pressure drug. And it's only because the men in the study didn't want to give up the drug. And they didn't know why, they were interested in the drug. And when they did, and they weren't, it's not as if they were asking about erectile function during a blood pressure study. They don't do that. And then they figured it out, and lo and behold, you had a $1 billion drug. Well, a couple $1 billion. Yeah. Or Pfizer probably made $20 billion. So getting back to this, this might turn out to be useful for people with chronic pain. It may be plunging into cold water. You can't go in slowly in a cold water. You have to plunge.
Oh, no, you have to plunge.
But
right
staying
now.
There for 2 minutes, if your heart and your body and stuff can take it, might be worthwhile, especially for neuropathic pain. Fascinating stuff.
Do you like cold water swimming?
I hate it. Are you kidding? Do you like it? Have you plunged into cold water?
I used to not like it, and now I like it.
Wait, you mean you like to plunge into cold water?
You're young and I'm old. When you get old, into cold water.
Yeah, that's because you're unaware of it. So you plunge into cold. You like cold water swimming?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, I hate cold water. I like to plunge into hot. I like a hot tub. I don't want cold water. Well, anyway, maybe that's why you don't have any pain, because you plunge into cold water all the time.
And maybe it's because I have a doctor who I go to.
We won't go into that. Next caller from
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Hello from Oklahoma.
Yeah. How can we help?
I was wondering if Zorba could advise me on some sort of pain for arthritis. It seems like every time I go to the doctor with something new, he says, it's arthritis, because we're jumping from a one-year-old to a 69-year-old.
Now, that's the polar plunge, jumping from one until 69.
Well, I was listening to that, and I'm thinking, do I want to do that? Can you just give me some kind of herb or something?
That would be easier. Well, you know, arthritis is interesting. It happens in all animals. Dinosaurs had arthritis. Ants have arthritis. They don't take anything for their arthritis, but ants have arthritis. And we don't know exactly, you know, what causes it. What have you tried? What's worked for your arthritis in the past?
I am taking a drug right now called Etodolac. And that seems to help.
Mm-hmm. It's an anti-inflammatory drug, similar but not exactly the same as ibuprofen, naproxen, diclofenac, and a few other drugs in that class.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to work. What else? You doing any exercise at all?
I try.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Part of the issue that's very good for people for arthritis to get going is actually warm water pools. And many municipalities have a warm water pool for senior citizens. You know, you're 69, you're a senior citizen, for arthritis exercises. And warm water pools have a couple of advantages. First of all, you're buoyant. So if you're overweight, you have a weight problem. You don't have a weight problem when you're in the pool. You know, you weigh less, just like everybody weighs less. But for people who are overweight, it's really wonderful. And then the warmth is really good for the joints, tends to get them moving a little bit more. And the more you move those joints, you know, the better things are. So I'd look at warm water swimming if it's available and you can do it and you can get there. There are a lot of obstacles to swimming, such as getting to the place, getting in the pool, getting into the water.
I hear all of these. You were talking about the internet being fake news, and you know, you see all these advertisements and pain free and all this stuff. And I was just wondering, is there anything there that does work?
Well, there are things that work intermittently. First of all, anti-inflammatories do work. They really do work. They help a lot of people. The second thing is, acetaminophen, which is the most common name brand, is Tylenol. It really works for lots of people. The Arthritis Strength 650 milligram tablets, two of those every 8 hours by the clock, literally every 8 hours, for some people can work wonders, easier on the stomach, doesn't have the same side effects that anti-inflammatories have. It really does work. Exercise does work, the right amount of exercise. Strengthening exercise, balanced exercise such as Tai Chi does work. The supplements that you see advertised left and right for, it's a multi-billion dollar a year, industry. They don't really work that well. So, glucosamine chondroitin sulfate, we thought, hey, this is really going to work, shock cartilage, and it would really do something. And the initial studies seemed to show that it did something, and then the later studies didn't seem to show that it did very much at all. So I think for those supplements, there is individual response. So for some people, it works, and for some people, it doesn't. And so the way you test that out is you take it for like 3 to 4 weeks, stop it for 3 to 4 weeks, take it for 3 to 4 weeks. You do it 2 or 3 times because there is a placebo effect. When you take a drug, if you think it's going to work, you pay money for it, it works. In fact, it's really your brain that's working, but that disappears over time. So if you want to try a supplement or two, you could try it. The problem is which supplement to try, and the answer is there's not a lot of science behind it.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and you know what? Once again, exercise really is an extremely useful thing. And look around to see whether or not you can join any kind of a buoyant water exercise, because that really makes a difference. You don't know where to start. Start at your local senior center, because there's often a head of a senior center, a social worker, or someone else who's there, and they know the resources in your area. They know that a lot better often than you do, and they can really steer you in the right direction.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite nitpickers, the Grammar Police. Now, the following email came to us from a listener, Jerry, in Wisconsin. He writes, on a recent show, Tom was talking about TV dinners. That's a term from the 1050s. These days, people call them frozen dinners.
From the 1050s. What about 1066? We might as well do the Normandy invasion.
We get it. We get it, Jerry. Kind of. We're now going to hand you an infraction from the typo police. I assume you meant the 1950s, not the 1050s. I can't imagine what kind of frozen dinners they had in the 1050s, Zorba.
Well, I think the frozen dinners they had was when it went in the middle of the winter when everything was frozen.
Did you catch a mistake we made? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us a typo-free email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And we need to go back on the Wayback Machine for Mr. Sherman.
Oh, I remember that.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman, and go to the Wayback Machine to like the 1050s to see what
kind of
frozen dinners they had back there.
More calls coming up, of course, as well as our tasty recipe, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again, 1 800 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, our recipe.
That's right. Stars and chicken stew. Maybe we should call it stars and stripes chicken stew.
Yeah.
But stars are those wonderful little pasta, little tiny star pasta.
Oh, yeah,
don't
yeah.
You're not smiling.
I'm not a pasta fan.
You're not a pasta. Oh, I love pasta. Didn't you like pasta as a kid?
I like rice. I don't like pasta. Could I substitute rice?
No, you can't. You can't substitute rice. Sorry. No, it's not allowed in this recipe. It's
part of it.
Now, did you like pasta as a kid?
I don't think they had pasta when I was
they
a kid.
They hadn't invented it yet. That's right. That's right. Before Marco Polo. That's how old you are. You are really, really old.
Let's do this recipe.
Okay. Start out with a chicken.
This is a
3 to 4 pound chicken. That's right. Start out with a live chicken.
I was going to say, is this a dead chicken?
Exactly. I knew that's what you were thinking of. 8 cups of chicken stock.
8 cups of chicken stock.
Which is a large can. You know those large cans of chicken stock.
Okay.
You'll take my word for it.
Yeah.
3 medium carrots thinly sliced.
3 medium carrots. Thinly sliced.
Yeah, that's right. Say it again. Thinly sliced.
Thinly sliced. Right.
Thank you. It's enough. It's overkill. Yeah. But, you know, you could buy just a package of the thinly sliced carrots that you see in the grocery store. And obviously, deer in the headlights. You know, the prepackaged carrots.
I know what that is. Yeah.
But they come sliced also. Did you ever
notice they come sliced? I was in a grocery store once.
1 cup of shallots coarsely chopped. And you could use onions if you don't have
shallots. 1 cup of shallots coarsely chopped.
4 celery stalks thinly sliced.
4 celery stalks thinly sliced?
I can already tell this is not a recipe you're going to make because you're already on ingredient number 6 and your eyes are rolling.
I'm looking at it. It says thickly sliced on my piece of paper.
Well, I'm going to make it thinly sliced. I don't care what you're eating.
You're the chef.
I'm making my decision.
Yeah, okay.
4 cloves of garlic smashed, but I'm going to say mashed.
4 cloves of garlic
smashed.
Right. Got it.
A teaspoon of chopped thyme. You could use a teaspoon of dried thyme, but you're better off with you know, the thyme that is fresh if you can.
Little tea. Chopped thyme.
Why do you? It's not thyme.
Thyme.
But why do you think it's pronounced thy and we forget the h?
I don't know.
I mean, it's so silly.
Well, I don't forget thyme. The h, obviously.
No, you don't. And why is the e silent?
Let's get the h out of here.
I mean, think about it. The thyme. The h is silent and the e is silent. I mean, it's like thyme. Why isn't thyme? Tym.
What else?
Okay, a bay leaf.
A bay leaf.
We're only halfway through the recipe, by the way.
This is an hour show.
Okay,
we don't have forever.
3 sprigs of parsley.
3 sprigs of parsley.
1/2 cup of stellini, which is tiny star pasta.
1/2 cup of stellini.
You didn't say tiny star pasta.
Like you said. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's the main part of it. That's the part you like, right?
Moving right along.
3 tablespoonfuls of unsalted butter. If you have salted butter, you can use that.
3 big tea unsalted butter.
1 tablespoon of lemon juice.
Big tea lemon juice.
1 tablespoon of chopped tarragon, or if you're going to use dry tarragon, make it 1 teaspoon.
Big tea chopped tarragon.
1/4 cup of chopped parsley.
1/4 cup chopped parsley.
6 slices of Italian bread.
6 slices of Italian bread.
1/4 cup extra virgin olive oil.
1/4 cup extra virgin olive oil.
1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese.
1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese.
And 6 guesses.
How long does it take to make this thing?
Long enough so you don't even have to listen to the recipe.
Okay.
Place the chicken in a 6-quart pot, breast side down. Add the stock, lightly seasoned with salt and pepper. Bring to a boil, skimming off, and add the carrots, shallots, celery, garlic, thyme, or thyme, whichever way you want to pronounce it, bay leaf, parsley, and simmer. After 15 minutes, flip the chicken gently. I don't mean to take it and skewer it and flip it so you get the place all dirty. And cook it for another 25 minutes or so. Then remove the chicken and let it cool. Gotta let it cool. You don't want to work with hot chicken. Let me tell you, it'll burn your hand.
I'll take your word for it.
I've done that. Been there, done that. Let it cool.
Got it.
Discard the bay leaf and the parsley. Strain the vegetables. Reserve the veggies and the liquid. Return the stock to the pot. Bring it to a boil. Pull the chicken meat off the bones. You could do that.
I stopped listening about 3 minutes ago.
Pull the chicken off the bones. Yeah. That's it. Pull it off the bones.
Okay.
You could do that. Add the pasta in the stock and cook for about 3 to 4 minutes. Follow the directions. It's usually a quick cooking pasta. Mm-hmm. Then whisk in the butter, lemon juice, tarragon, and parsley. Add the chicken and veggies back. Heat it through. Have your 6 guests sit at the table because they're already bored with the fact that you've made all of this stuff. Serve it, drizzle it with olive oil, sprinkle with Parmesan, yeah. and top it. And then, wonderful, you've got it. That's it. It's a good recipe.
Yeah, you have to start making this long before the guests arrive.
You
got to
start a week before the guests arrive. Okay. If you want a copy of this recipe, yeah. go through Facebook and you'll find it, or come to our website, zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. You can see wonderful pictures, find our other fine recipes, and have a romp through our website. That's zorbapastor.org.
Back to the phones. We go now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now in Manitowish Waters, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Fine, how can we help?
Oh, I had a question about my hands and just about all the way up to my elbow. It only really happens when I'm sleeping. It's kind of like they go numb, but more loss of feeling and pain.
How long has it been going on?
Probably about two years.
Oh, quite a long time. Mm-hmm. What have you done for it? You've done something, I take it.
I do stretches. That's about it. I don't have insurance. I ain't been to the doctor. Uh-huh. I Googled it, which is always dangerous, but...
It is always dangerous. It's right.
Yeah, it could be a number of things with that, but there was a thing that was interesting about a pinched ulnar mm-hmm.
right.
nerve.
Carpal tunnel.
Or carpal tunnel and about mm-hmm. 100 other things.
Right. Right.
But I didn't know if there's any supplements, anything else I can do to try to help. Throughout the day, there's mm-hmm. no pain.
Yeah, it's when you sleep at night.
It hurts so bad. Yeah. Like, I got to wake up and stand up. It's like there's no blood going to them. And
the easiest, cheapest, most inexpensive suggestion is to go and get a splint. You can buy them at a number of stores, Walmart, Kmart, Target. They all have them. And these are wrist splints. And what they do is they splint your wrist at night so your wrist isn't moving. You're not putting pressure over the carpal tunnel. The carpal tunnel is right at the juncture where your hand and your arm are, right at the wrist. And it's a little tunnel and a nerve passes through it. And quite often, if you've got carpal tunnel syndrome, which means this tunnel is compressing on the nerve, you then have discomfort and you've got pins and needles and it wakes you up at night. And sometimes just wearing splints at night will work. Sometimes that works a lot for people and that's all they have to do. I would try that out. Do you use a computer often during the day where your hand is on the table when you're typing?
No, I'm a carpenter.
You're a carpenter. Doesn't bother you when you're working as a carpenter, right?
Not really. Every once in a while, if I'm holding a pack of nails or screws with my pointer finger and my thumb, mm-hmm. and I'm doing a lot of motion with that, I can feel it tightening up. But mm-hmm.
What do you do then when you feel that?
I stretch it a little bit or hold them a little different.
Okay.
I'm relatively young. I'm only 30, but...
Yeah. Well, you can get carpal tunnel 30. So getting back to the issue, splint your wrist. That may be. It's an inexpensive way to do it. Supplements are not going to do anything. At some point, if it gets worse, you may need surgery. You're not going to do that unless you have insurance. The wrist splints really work at night. They work for, I would say, 8 out of 10 people. 8 out of 10 people, they work. And go out and buy it at a store where you can return it if it's not the right splint. And you want a splint that's comfortable for you. So some are kind of a lace-up splint. Some just use Velcro. Find one that works for you. Some are called a cock-up splint because they look like a rooster's head. They're also called a rooster head splint. And it has other meanings, doesn't it? But that's what it's called, a cock-up splint. It's a rooster head splint. And try it. And, as I say, find the one that works for you, and that's probably the answer to the problem.
All right. I'm going to have to try that. Thank you.
You're welcome. You take care.
Appreciate the call. Keep up the good work. I'm guessing when you buy the splint, it's in a package that if you open it, you can't return it.
Of course you can return it. You take it to a store like Walgreens, Walmart, CVS Pharmacy. Of course you can return it. Don't you return things? They take it. Stores take it back. And then they don't sell it to you. They end up putting it on a secondary market. And for those people who use the internet, you can actually get things on the secondary market. And the biggest secondary market is eBay. Have you ever heard of eBay? eBay. That's a secondary market. But seriously, yes, if you open it up and it doesn't work, you bring it back. That's why I recommend people go to larger stores, because you should never think twice about bringing something back to Walmart. They're a big company, or Walgreens or CVS, and you find the thing that works for you. If you don't like it, bring it back.
Good advice. 800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. Before the break now, Zorba, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named Mark in Oklahoma. He writes, Dr. Zorba, I was a little offended by some of your comments about pharmacies. You basically implied that the pharmacies are just out to try and make a buck off our patients. We work very hard to work with doctors and help our patients. You are correct in that pharmacies do not know the cost of a prescription, particularly on insurance, until we fill it. The way the systems are set up, we don't file a claim with the insurance until we have a prescription and try to fill it. And that's when we find out if the insurance is going to pay for it and how much it's going to be. We spend a large majority of our day fighting insurance companies, and the rest of our day is spent fixing doctor errors.
Well, fixing doctor errors. Well, first of all, I did not mean to dish pharmacists at all. I think they're great. And actually, I'm often very complimentary about pharmacists. And I didn't talk about pharmacists when I talked about that. I talked about pharmacies. And I actually was really thinking about the fact that you've got this whole debacle that's set up. You have insurance companies that want to pay as little as possible, right?
Yeah.
Then you've got drug companies that want to charge as much as possible. They want you to use the name brand if possible. Then you have the pharmacists. He put it rightly. We don't know until we file it, which, of course, is bogus, not on his end, but from the pharmaceutical company and the insurance company. And then you have the patient caught in the middle. So I'll give a perfect example. I'll have a patient that will go to the pharmacy, and they need something called a proton pump inhibitor. And I may write for one, and that'll cost them $75, and another one might cost them $12. And I don't know which proton pump inhibitor they, you know, they will be covered by their insurance. So the issue is they go to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist might say, because not all pharmacists take the time. Most of them do, but the vast majority. Many will take the time and say, look, this one isn't covered, but I happen to know this one is covered. They don't actually, as he said, know unless they actually file the next one that's covered. And the whole system is really biased against the consumer. That's the issue. The consumer is the one who's there. And then quite often people don't ask. They'll say, well, my doctor said I should take this drug, and they'll pony up $102 for something that might be only $25. So the problem is people have to know that just because the pharmacy doesn't have the answer right away, they can get the answer for them. And I apologize if I offended any pharmacists.
I used to go to a small drugstore, which couldn't operate anymore, had to go out of business. I think drugstores are having a hard time, small drugstores, because they can't make a profit enough on the
Well, small drugstores are, because the profit isn't, many times the profit is not just in the prescription, that's squeezed down. It's in the stuff on the way to the prescription. Have you ever noticed that the pharmacy is in the back of the store?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a reason
good
for
reason
that.
Good reason for that.
Uncle Charlie Walgreen, that's what he was, that was his nickname, Uncle Charlie. He invented the whole idea that you've got to walk through the entire store, and while you're at it, you'll pick up the high profit items. You know, that are in there from the pharmacy point of view. But still, the pharmacist should be able to tell the patient, hey, there may be another drug here, and then you have to do it. Now, as for fixing errors with the doctor, there is a lot of information that goes back and forth between a doctor and a pharmacy. And having a good relationship with the doctor's office, with the pharmacy, makes a difference. I have to say, the electronic medical record has reduced the number of errors in prescriptions dramatically compared to what it was when we handwrote, you know, when you used to handwrite prescriptions. Just imagine looking at that scribble.
Yeah. Do you take issue with something Zorba said? Feel free to post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls coming up and another topic to talk about. Our special Facebook feedback segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, eating fast may raise the risk of obesity?
Right. Very interesting study. So are you a fast eater or a slow eater? Actually, you don't eat very much.
I don't eat a lot, so it goes quick.
You're a no eater. That's right. But you're probably in between somewhere. But there are a number of people who are fast eaters. My father-in-law was a fast eater. He was somewhat overweight because there were six kids in his family, and he said if he didn't eat quickly, that there wasn't enough food there. But anyway, this is a very interesting Japanese study, self-reported study. 60,000 people given a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. They had periodic checkups over a six-year period, and they collected data on obesity, waist circumference, eating habits, sleep patterns, how much alcohol they consume, the medicines they took, whether or not they smoked, the usual stuff that they gather. And then they categorize subjects as fast, normal, or slow eaters based on self-reports. And people are pretty good about it. I mean, they'll usually say, yeah, I eat really quickly, or no, I really eat kind of slowly, and then the normal's in between. So after they controlled for all those other factors, when they compared the slow eaters to the normal eaters to the fast eaters, the normal eaters were 29% more likely to be overweight, and the fast eaters 42% more likely to be overweight than the slow eaters.
Really?
In other words, the slow eaters were the least likely to be overweight. It was very interesting. The other factors they found were going to sleep within 2 hours after eating dinner was more likely to make you obese, and snacking after dinner, which kind of makes sense to me, was also more likely to be obese. But skipping breakfast was not. So skipping breakfast was not an issue with the study. So, you know, this is an association. It's not cause and effect. It's self-reported stuff. We can go on and on and on. But it may be that that's one factor that you want to look at in terms of eating, that eating slower will make a difference.
Thinking about it, when my wife and I are at a restaurant, I tend to not eat as fast as my wife. She's finished before I am. And as you know, I'm very skinny.
That's right. You're very skinny. So that might be exactly it. That may be part of the fact that you're thin. You know, and also this whole thing about eating, you know, if you eat late at night, it just stays in your stomach and goes to fat. Well, maybe that is indeed the case. I think we have to start looking at factors besides calories. Clearly, it's not just calories. Mm-hmm. It's when you eat the calories. It may also be how you eat the calories. You know, sitting in your car, eating it quickly while you're going down the roll, going down the road, may be one of the reasons you're obese. It may not just be the food you're putting in your mouth, but it may be how you're eating the food and how quickly you're eating your food. So I recommend slowing down.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Nogani, Michigan. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I was just diagnosed recently with macular degeneration, and I'm just learning more about it now. One of the things, I get it's a wet form, apparently, so I get a shot in the eyeball with a drug. And I'm not quite sure what the expectations are and what the success rate with that particular technique, I guess, is to slow down or stop the progression of the disease.
Yeah, that's what it is. First of all, tell me about the shots. Tell our listeners about the shots. How painful are they?
Not at all. In fact, you don't have time. When he first examined the eye and everything, he then said, well, I'll meet you in the other room here in about 5 minutes. And bam, you get in the other room, he sets you up, you get betadine rubbed over your eyelids, and he comes in, he puts the numbing solution in your eye, and so it's all numbed, puts a device on your eyelids to keep them open, and the next thing you know, there's an injection made, and it's all over. There's no pain involved whatsoever. It's a small, I think it's about if I remember right, about 50 microliters, so about 0.05 milliliter.
Yeah, it's a very, it's a very, very small amount. Small amount they actually actually put in the eye. The initial drug was called Avastin. It was an anti-cancer drug that actually reduces the body's ability to make new blood vessels. Avastin, A meaning no, Vastin meaning vascular. That's how they named it. I don't know who got the bright idea to actually shoot it into an eye to stop what macular degeneration that has a lot to do with blood vessels, but it works. How long does it work? Well, there are people who have been on it for years, and it seems to halt the course of it, and it seems to be quite effective. I don't know exactly how long it tends to last. This is still relatively new, although it's been working for about 10 years. There's some other drugs that they now inject. You may not be getting Avastin. You may be getting another drug within that. But it seems to make a big difference. How's your vision?
Well, it's in that particular eye, it's stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the chart, of course, with the dot in the middle, and you see the wavy line. You know, that hasn't changed too much, and it's not that serious. Don't get me wrong, but there's still blurriness to it. After cataract surgery, everything was doing great, but when this came on, there was a blurry nature to that particular eye.
But you're able to read with your other eye. Is that what happens? How's your reading?
Oh yeah, and if I wear glasses, I can correct the blurriness.
Excellent.
Which is interesting. I'm not sure why that's going on, because wouldn't the light image form on the macula around the fovea, wouldn't that be affected?
Sure, that would be affected, but it may be that part of the issue you have has to do with where the light is focused. I mean, that's what a prism, that's what a glass, that's what glasses do.
Yeah.
They just change where the focus is, and so it's the magic of glasses. We've come a long way since Ben Franklin invented the bifocal.
Sometimes I wonder, but yeah, we have.
Yes, in certain ways we've come a long way, certainly with glasses. I have patients who have been getting shots for many, many years. I don't remember how long, certainly more than 5 years and maybe up to 10 years. It's been quite a long time that it's been around. And once again, I don't know if it's 5 or 10 years, but it's been quite a few years. And the drug seems to be effective. And it's not painful for you.
Yeah, that seems reassuring. I appreciate that. I didn't know what the longevity. Talk about he's got about a 15% success ratio.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're one of that success ratio because it stabilized things, and that's exactly,
right.
and that's really where
the machine you look into is by Zeiss, that he scans your eye with. And that shows, it actually showed up as the bulge in the iris. Where the blood vessels were
leaking. You mean when he did his examination?
Yeah, we did the exam. They do that every time. And so then it showed after the third shot, there's no longer that bulge there.
And the drug seems to be effective. So now, what did you do for a living, or what do you do for a living?
Oh, I'm 76. I'm retired.
Yeah.
I worked for Wisconsin DNR. Ran a research group.
Okay. I wonder, you said, because you've used the word Zeiss, you've used the word fovea, and you've used the word macula. So I knew that you were scientifically oriented.
Yeah, well, you're going to learn a lot when someone tells you you're going to go blind.
Yes, you do learn a lot when they tell you that. Keep up the good work. Keep moving. That's what we say.
Thank you.
You take care.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. What else are we going to look at while we're supposed to be working? Time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
Okay, Zorba, are you ready?
I am.
First, Katie in Cloquet, Minnesota writes, I'm interested in your views on naturopathic doctors, not naturopaths, there's a difference, and what you know about histamine intolerance.
Well, first of all, histamine is a big issue. Allergies are, histamine mediated. We don't understand exactly why some people are more allergic than other people. There's some theories involved, may have to do with the food you're eating, whether or not you're smelling certain things. Of course, it has to do with pollen and other things in the air. here. So I would say Western medicine has a lot to offer in terms of antihistamines and steroids, but not a lot to offer in terms of where it came from and when it started. And it might be that naturopathic doctors and all sorts of alternative medicine doctors may have something to offer, and I'll leave it at that.
What's the difference between naturopathic doctors and naturopaths?
Well, I think of them as exactly the same, but obviously there's a difference in two types of doctors, and some are licensed differently in different states. It has to do with the schools that they go through. But in my mind, they're in the same spot, but I'm sure somebody will chime in on that.
Now, Linda in Wisconsin writes, what are your thoughts on the forks over knives diet?
Forks over knives. You mean that we should use more vegetables and fruits versus cutting up meat and other things of that nature? I'm an omnivore, and as an omnivore, I stand up for omnivore rights. I eat everything that there is. And so I think it's a personal choice, and I believe that personal choices are the best way to go.
Next, Lena from Oklahoma City says, Zorba, you just said if urine is tea-colored, you are drinking enough what?
Water. In other words, we know what concentrated urine looks like, unless you've never looked in the toilet, and we've all looked in the toilet at some time in our lives. And if it's tea-colored or lightly colored, it means we're often hydrated, and that's the best way to really determine your hydration status.
Finally, this from Lois in Viroqua, Wisconsin. I was reading the recipe for Popeye pot pie my husband, and he almost choked on his wine when I got to the olive oil part. Ha, 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 she says. A good sense of humor is 99% of the key to good health.
Yes, it is. I agree with that.
Let's keep those Facebook questions coming, and you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. O-R-G.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. As we welcome our next caller, a listener in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi. My fingernails and toenails have horizontal lines. I'm wondering what may possibly be the cause of that and if I can correct it.
Well, first of all, most nail problems, let's talk about what they are most of the time. Don't talk about what it could be. So, first of all, do you wash your dishes in the sink with dishwashing detergent, right? You do your dishes, right?
Yes.
Do you use gloves?
No.
That's the main problem, and that's the problem 95% of the time. Dishwashing detergent is the most detrimental thing to nails invented on earth, and people don't think about it because it's sudsy and it's warm and I'm doing a good job and cleanliness is next to godliness and keeping my stuff and my nails look nice and clean afterwards, but it turns out they really disrupt the keratin in the nails. So first thing I would do is do that. And it's going to take 3 to 6 months for your nails to recover from it. Wear the gloves 100% of the time. Buy large gloves so you don't have to stretch to get into them. I find them the easiest. And do that. That's the first thing, because that's the most common thing. Now, nails itself, problems can be from iron deficiency anemia, very rare problem that we have. And there are a list of things. If you go to Google and you look at problems with nails, you'll see a list of medical problems with nails. But they're the rare event. It's usually from stuff that is touching our nails that are destroying it. When you clean around the house, do you clean your toilets?
Yes.
Do you use gloves or you don't use gloves?
I do. I use gloves.
Use gloves in the toilet.
But why and do you, a brush.
So
a brush.
Gloves and a brush. So why do you use gloves in the toilet? I mean, I know the answer, but you do it because it's yucky, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's yucky stuff. Well, and using something that's going to clean the toilet, something that is a detergent. That detergent, the stuff that's in that, is probably very similar to the stuff that's in your dishwashing detergent, you know, that using in the dishes, but using that with food. So it's not as yucky, but the destruction of the nails happens to be exactly the same. So The other thing is go to paper plates. Forget about washing dishes. Go to paper plates.
Or destroy restaurants.
Or restaurants. Like, Tom, go to restaurants and have them do the dishes. There you've got. Or servants. Hire a servant to do the dishes.
Oh,
that's
sure.
Right.
Yeah, if I had that kind of money, Oh, boy. No, that's not possible.
That's not possible. You won't.
Anyway, then you still have the pots. You know, even with you have to cook.
But if you have staff, they cook for you. You need staff. That's what you need.
Well, if you'll pay for it, I'll be glad to do that.
You have a great day now.
Thank you.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Before we head out today, Zorba, we don't mind taking our lumps from the grammar police or debating the issues during our Disagreeing with the Doc segment, but now and then it's nice just to hear that we're doing a good job. The following email came to us from a listener, Tom. Hello, Dr.
Well, that's a great name.
I think so. Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I am a native of Neenah, Wisconsin, living in Munich, Germany for some time now. Thanks to the wonder of the web, I'm able to hear your show. I've also been a loyal listener to you guys since the show's beginning.
Oh, wow.
You guys rock.
Oh, great. Oh,
you provide up-to-date, important, and inspiring advice. As a longtime vegan, I especially like your focus on good nutrition, i.e., the Mediterranean diet. I appreciate that you accomplish all this in an empathetic, laid-back way with copious amounts of humor injected. Congratulations to both of you on your show's 25th year anniversary. I wish you both many more to come.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Very, very nice. What a wonderful compliment.
Can you do another 25?
I'm only halfway through my career.
Yeah. I think I'd have a problem with two or three. Anyway, as Zorba helped you, please share your story with us. You can always call us at 800-462-7413 or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.